Someone just told you it's been long enough, didn't they? Maybe they didn't say it outright, but you felt it in their tone, saw it in their eyes, or heard that careful silence when you mentioned their name again. And now you're sitting here wondering if something's broken inside you because you're still not okay. If you're lying awake at night questioning why you're still sad, if you're apologizing before you speak about your loss because you're afraid people are tired of hearing about it, if you're performing fine in public while falling apart in your car, you need to hear this. Maybe you've started avoiding certain friends because you can see their discomfort when you're not bouncing back fast enough. Perhaps you're wondering why everyone else seems to have a grief timeline printed somewhere and you never got the memo. You might be feeling guilty for still having hard days, or worse, feeling angry at yourself for not being able to just move on like people keep suggesting. You're probably exhausted from pretending you're further along than you actually are, and terrified that if you're still feeling this way now, maybe you always will. You've probably tried pushing yourself to feel better faster. You've likely set deadlines for your own healing, telling yourself that by this holiday, this birthday, this anniversary, you'll be past it. Maybe you've thrown yourself into staying busy, filling every moment so you don't have to feel what's actually happening inside. You've probably read articles about the stages of grief and panicked when you didn't experience them in order, or cycled back through ones you thought you'd finished. You might have tried just not talking about it anymore, figuring if you stop bringing them up, the pain will fade on its own. Perhaps you've even tried grief counseling, only to feel worse when the counselor suggested a standard timeline that didn't match your reality. You've probably compared yourself to others who lost someone and seemed to recover faster, wondering what they know that you don't. Here's what I want you to understand in the next 15 minutes. Your grief timeline isn't wrong. It's responding to something other people can't see. There's a reason you're still feeling what you're feeling, and it has nothing to do with weakness, dysfunction, or doing grief incorrectly. In this audio, I'm going to show you exactly why some losses take longer to process, how to recognize what's actually happening beneath your surface symptoms, and most importantly, how to stop abandoning yourself in the exact moments you need your own compassion most. You're going to learn a simple framework called the Depth Anchor Method that will help you understand your grief's unique shape and size so you can finally stop measuring yourself against timelines that were never meant for your specific loss. But I need something from you first. I need you to commit to listening to this entire audio without jumping ahead. I know you're used to rushing, to pushing, to trying to speed through the uncomfortable parts. That's probably what got you here. This approach is different. It's going to ask you to slow down and look at what you've been trying to run from. Some of what I share might feel counterintuitive, especially if you've been taught that healing means feeling less. If you're willing to sit with me for these few minutes, if you're willing to consider that maybe your grief is actually working exactly as it should, I'm going to show you something that will change how you see this entire experience. Can you give yourself that? Not for anyone else's timeline, for yours. Here's the thing nobody tells you about grief timelines. We've been conditioned to think that if we just follow the right steps, hit the right milestones, maybe talk to a therapist or join a support group, eventually we'll get over it according to some invisible schedule everyone else seems to understand. And when that doesn't happen, when we're still crying at random moments 6 months later, or feeling numb 2 years in, we assume we're doing something wrong. But that's not what's happening at all. Most advice about grief tells you to work through the stages, to process your feelings, to give it time and focus on self-care. And sure, these things aren't harmful, they're just addressing the tip of the iceberg, that visible part above the waterline that everyone can see. You go to therapy, you journal, you talk about your feelings with friends, and you might feel some relief in those moments. The surface might smooth out a bit. But here's what that approach misses entirely. The vast, frozen mass of grief sitting beneath the surface doesn't respond to surface-level interventions. You can chip away at the top all day long, but the deep structure of your loss, the way it's fundamentally reorganized your inner world, operates on a completely different timeline. It's like trying to melt an iceberg with a hairdryer.
You might see some results where you're pointing it, but you haven't touched the actual depth of what needs to transform. But even if you understand that grief is deeper than most approaches acknowledge, you're still operating in a system that's actively working against your natural process. Think about the messages you receive from every direction. You get 3 days of bereavement leave from work, maybe a week if you're lucky. After the funeral, the casseroles stop coming. People stop asking how you're doing after about a month because they assume you're better now. Social media shows you everyone else's highlight reels while you're barely holding it together. Your calendar keeps moving forward with birthdays and holidays and ordinary Tuesdays, completely indifferent to the fact that your world has shattered. The entire infrastructure of modern life is designed for people who aren't carrying this weight, and it expects you to slot back into that same infrastructure on its terms, not yours. Even your own brain gets recruited into this system. You start noticing that when you cry at work, people get uncomfortable. When you mention your loss at a party, the conversation stalls. When you're not doing better at the pace others expect, you see the concern in their eyes that starts to look a lot like judgment. So you learn. You learn to perform okayness. You learn to save your tears for the car or the shower. You learn which friends can handle hearing about it and which ones need you to pretend you've moved on. And here's where it gets really insidious. You start believing your own performance. You think, well, I made it through that whole dinner without crying, so maybe I am better. You mistake your ability to hide your grief for actual healing. This is where so many people get trapped. They try to push through, to be strong, to focus on the positive, and get back to normal as quickly as possible. And in the short term, this seems to work. You go back to work, you smile at the right times, you stay busy enough that you don't have to feel it. But what's actually happening beneath the surface is that you're not melting the iceberg, you're fragmenting it. Imagine taking that massive frozen structure and applying sudden, intense pressure to just one part of it. It doesn't melt smoothly. It cracks, it splinters, chunks break off in dangerous, unpredictable ways. That's what forcing your grief into someone else's timeline does. Those fragments float around inside you, bumping into your daily life at random moments. A song on the radio becomes a grenade. A smell in the grocery store knocks you sideways. You're fine until suddenly you're absolutely not. And you have no idea why this particular Tuesday destroyed you when last Tuesday was manageable. The forcing doesn't speed anything up. It just makes the process chaotic and compounds your confusion about what's normal. But underneath all of these obstacles, there's something even more fundamental at play. What's really happening is you're up against what I call the grief performance pressure. It's this invisible but overwhelming cultural expectation that grief must follow a predictable timeline with visible milestones of progress and moving on. There's supposed to be an arc to your story: the tragic loss, the understandable falling apart, the gradual rebuilding, and finally, the triumphant return to life with some hard-won wisdom. Other people aren't just hoping for this arc, they're expecting it, monitoring for it, waiting for you to deliver it. Your grief has become a narrative they're watching, and they need you to get to the resolution so they can feel comfortable again. And here's what makes this so damaging. It turns your authentic mourning into a staged recovery show for others' comfort. You stop asking, what do I actually need right now? And start asking, what will make other people feel like I'm making progress? You stop listening to the deep, slow wisdom of your own grieving process and start performing the milestones you think you're supposed to hit. The grief becomes less about your relationship with your loss and more about managing everyone else's anxiety about your loss. And until you recognize this invisible enemy, until you see how the grief performance pressure has hijacked your natural process and replaced it with a timeline that was never yours to begin with, you'll keep feeling like you're failing at something you were never supposed to perform in the first place. Now, let me introduce you to the depth anchor method, and I need you to really hear what I'm about to say because it contradicts everything our culture has taught you about grief. You're not grieving too slowly. You're grieving at the exact depth your love deserves. And anyone rushing you, anyone checking their watch while you talk about your loss, anyone suggesting it's been long enough, they're not responding to something wrong with you. They're responding to their own discomfort with the magnitude of what you've lost. Think about an iceberg for a moment. When people see an iceberg, they see that beautiful white tip breaking through the water's surface. It looks manageable. It looks like something that should melt in the warm sun within a reasonable time frame. But what they're not seeing is the massive frozen structure below the waterline, the enormous depth that's 7, 8, sometimes 9 times larger than what's visible. That hidden mass doesn't melt according to the schedule of people observing from the shore. It melts in layers, from the outside in, at a pace determined by physics and nature and the sheer density of ice that formed over years. Your grief is that iceberg. What people see, your tears at a family dinner, your inability to clean out the closet, your moments of withdrawal, that's just the tip. The depth of your grief, the full structure of it, exists far below what anyone can observe. And that depth corresponds directly to the depth of your love, your connection, your years of intertwined lives. When someone tells you it's been long enough, they're essentially standing on the shore saying the iceberg should have completely melted by now because they can't see how much ice remains below the surface. They're measuring your timeline based on their visibility, not your reality. The depth anchor method is different from everything else you've tried because it doesn't ask you to move through grief faster. It doesn't give you techniques to process more efficiently or heal on someone else's schedule. Instead, it gives you 5 specific practices that anchor you to your own authentic timeline, that help you honor the true depth of your loss while protecting yourself from the constant pressure to wrap it up and move on. This method acknowledges what your heart already knows, that significant love leaves significant grief, and rushing that grief doesn't heal it. It only fragments it into pieces you'll trip over for years to come. The framework is built around the word depth itself, because that's what we're honoring here, the depth of your loss, the depth of your love, and your right to grieve at depth rather than at surface level. Each letter represents 1 of the 5 practices you'll implement, and together they create a complete system for protecting your natural grief timeline while living in a world that's impatient with your pain. Let me walk you through each element, and I want you to really sit with these because they're going to feel revolutionary compared to what everyone else has been telling you. The D stands for declare. Declare your grief's natural timeline by stating aloud, "My grief moves at the pace my love requires," whenever you feel rushed. This isn't just a nice affirmation. This is a verbal boundary that you're placing between your authentic grief experience and external pressure. When your mother-in-law mentions that her friend was back to normal 6 months after her loss, you're going to look at her and say, "My grief moves at the pace my love requires." When your supervisor hints that you should be more yourself at work by now, you're going to say it. When your own mind starts echoing all those timelines people have suggested, you're going to say it out loud to yourself. Here's why this is powerful. First, you're not defending yourself. You're not explaining or justifying. You're declaring a truth. The statement doesn't invite debate because it's not an opinion. It's a fact about the relationship between love and grief. Second, saying it aloud does something neurologically. It activates different brain pathways than just thinking it. It engages your motor cortex, your auditory processing, your sense of self-authorship. You become both the speaker and the listener of this truth, which reinforces it in multiple ways simultaneously. Let me give you some specific scenarios. Your sister calls and says, "I'm worried about you. It's been a year and you're still so sad." You respond, "My grief moves at the pace my love requires." She might push back. She might say, "But don't you think you should talk to someone? Maybe get some medication?" And you repeat it, "My grief moves at the pace my love requires." You're not being stubborn. You're anchoring to your truth. Now, this doesn't mean you won't seek help if you need it. It means you're not letting someone else's discomfort dictate your timeline. Or imagine you're at a social gathering and someone asks you about your spouse who died. You start to talk about them, your eyes get a little wet, and you see the person's face shift into that uncomfortable expression. They glance away, change the subject quickly. In that moment, silently or aloud, depending on the situation, you anchor yourself. "My grief moves at the pace my love requires." You've just separated their discomfort from your experience.
Their inability to sit with your pain doesn't mean your pain is inappropriate. The E stands for exit. Exit conversations where your grief is being measured, timed, or compared. And you do this physically by leaving or redirecting the topic without explanation. This is going to feel rude at first. You've been socialized to be polite, to accommodate other people's conversational choices, to not make things awkward. But here's what I need you to understand. Someone measuring your grief is already being rude. Someone timing your pain is already making things awkward. You're just refusing to participate in it anymore. This looks different depending on the situation. If you're at a dinner party and Uncle Bob starts talking about how quickly he bounced back after his father died and how you just have to choose happiness, you have full permission to stand up and go to the bathroom. Just leave. You don't owe him a counterargument. You don't need to explain that everyone's grief is different. You certainly don't need to sit there absorbing his implicit message that you're doing it wrong. You physically exit. If you're on the phone with a friend who starts comparing your loss to her divorce, saying she understands because her grief was also hard, but she gave herself 6 months and then made herself move forward, you can say, "I need to go. I'll call you later," and hang up. You can redirect. "I'm not available to discuss my timeline right now. Tell me about your new project at work." Notice you're not explaining why you won't discuss it. You're not teaching them about grief. You're simply exiting that particular conversation. This practice protects your energy. Every time you stay in a conversation where someone is measuring your grief, you're using precious emotional resources to defend yourself, to manage their discomfort, to explain grief basics to someone who isn't actually asking to understand. That energy belongs to your healing, not their education. You'll know you need to exit when you feel that specific sensation. Your chest tightens, your jaw clenches, you start mentally preparing arguments. That's your signal. Exit. The P stands for permission. Permission yourself daily by writing one thing you're allowing yourself to still feel, miss, or struggle with no timeline attached. This is a written practice, and the writing part is non-negotiable, because writing activates something that thinking doesn't. When you write, "I give myself permission to still cry when I smell his cologne," you're creating a record that stands against all the external messages about what you should be over by now. Every single day, you're going to write one permission statement. Some days it might be, "I give myself permission to still feel married, even though he's gone." Other days, "I give myself permission to struggle with the grocery store where we shopped together," or "I give myself permission to miss her in ways that haven't gotten any lighter." The specific content matters less than the practice of actively granting yourself permission in writing. Here's what this practice does. It counteracts the daily accumulation of shoulds that you're absorbing from everywhere. You might not even notice them all. The magazine article about resilience, the Instagram post about choosing joy, the offhand comment from a coworker about someone else who handled loss so well. Each of these deposits a small should in your consciousness. Should be stronger, should be further along, should be different than you are.
The permission practice makes daily deposits in the opposite direction. It builds a record of your own authority over your grief experience. Keep these permission statements somewhere you can see them accumulate, a journal, a notes app, wherever, because there will be hard days when you need to look back and see that you've been giving yourself permission all along. You'll see 50, 100, 200 permission statements, and you'll recognize that you've been honoring your depth every single day, despite all the pressure to rush to the surface. The T stands for translate. Translate others' discomfort by recognizing their rushing as their own anxiety, not evidence of your wrongness, and name it silently. That's their discomfort, not my deadline. She's anxious about my pain and wants relief from that anxiety. Your boss mentions that the company has been very patient with your reduced capacity. You translate, that's his discomfort, not my deadline. He's uncomfortable with the unpredictability of grief and wants me to return to a manageable state. Notice you're not explaining why you won't discuss it. You're not teaching them about grief. You're simply exiting that particular conversation. This practice protects your energy. Every time you stay in a conversation where someone is measuring your grief, you're using precious emotional resources to defend yourself, to manage their discomfort, to explain grief basics to someone who isn't actually asking to understand. That energy belongs to your healing, not their education. You'll know you need to exit when you feel that specific sensation. Your chest tightens, your jaw clenches, you start mentally preparing arguments. That's your signal. Exit. You're not translating to judge them or dismiss their feelings. You're translating to separate their experience from your reality. When someone rushes you, they're almost always dealing with one of three things. They're uncomfortable witnessing ongoing pain because it reminds them of their own vulnerability. They're uncomfortable with their inability to fix your pain because it challenges their sense of control. Or they're uncomfortable with the relationship change that your grief has created because they want the old you back. All three of these are valid human responses, but none of them are information about your grief timeline. When you translate, you're seeing their reaction clearly without letting it become a directive for your healing. You might even feel compassion for their discomfort while still maintaining your boundary about your pace. Practice this actively. When someone makes a comment about your grief, pause before responding and silently translate, "That's their discomfort, not my deadline." You'll notice that this split-second practice changes everything. Instead of immediately doubting yourself and wondering if they're right that you should be further along, you stay anchored in your own truth while accurately understanding what's actually happening in the interaction. The H stands for honor. Honor your depth by creating one weekly ritual that acknowledges the continuing presence of your loss, keeping the weight visible to yourself. This practice is about actively maintaining connection with the full reality of your grief rather than letting external pressure push it underground. Your ritual might look like lighting a candle every Sunday evening and sitting quietly with your loss for 10 minutes. It might be visiting a meaningful place every Saturday morning. It might be writing a letter to the person you lost every Wednesday, telling them what you're struggling with, what you miss, what continues to be hard. The specific ritual matters less than its consistency and its purpose. You're creating a regular space where the depth of your grief is acknowledged rather than minimized. This practice does something crucial. When everyone around you is suggesting you should be moving on, your weekly ritual says, "This loss is still significant. This absence still matters. This grief still deserves space." You're not doing this ritual to process more efficiently or to work through your grief. You're doing it to honor the truth that significant loss creates ongoing grief, and that ongoing grief deserves ongoing acknowledgement. The ritual keeps your grief visible to yourself, even when you're being pressured to hide it from others. Because here's what happens without this practice. You start performing normalcy. You laugh at parties, you function at work, you answer fine when people ask how you are, and gradually you start believing you should actually be fine. The gap between your public performance and your internal reality creates shame. The ritual prevents this. It's your weekly return to truth, where you acknowledge that underneath the functioning is still the full depth of your loss. Some of you are thinking, but won't this keep me stuck? Won't this ritual prevent me from healing? This is the voice of all those external timelines you've internalized. The ritual doesn't prevent healing. It prevents the fragmentation that happens when you're forced to pack up your grief before it's ready to transform. Think back to the iceberg. If you try to speed up melting by breaking off chunks, you don't get faster melting. You get dangerous fragments that cause damage. The ritual lets your grief melt at its natural pace, in its natural layers. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. You're thinking, but what if people are right? What if I am taking too long? What if I'm being self-indulgent, or wallowing, or not trying hard enough? Let me address this directly, because it's the biggest obstacle to implementing this method. First, ask yourself, where did the timeline you're comparing yourself to come from? Did someone conduct studies on your specific relationship, your specific loss, your specific nervous system, your specific life context, and then generate a custom timeline for your grief? No. The timeline is either completely arbitrary, someone's gut feeling about what seems like enough time, or it's based on averages that have nothing to do with your particular depth of loss. You wouldn't use an average shoe size to determine whether your feet are wrong. Don't use an average grief timeline to determine whether your grief is wrong. Second, consider what moving on actually means to the people using that phrase. Often, they mean, stop talking about it where I can hear. They mean, return to the version of you that I was comfortable with. They mean, grieve in ways that don't remind me of my own vulnerability to loss. When you understand this, you realize that moving on is frequently about their comfort, not your healing. Third, and this is important, there's a massive difference between honoring your natural timeline and avoiding your grief entirely. The depth anchor method isn't about hiding from your pain. It's about refusing to rush through it on someone else's schedule. If you're genuinely avoiding your grief, numbing constantly, refusing to acknowledge the loss, creating elaborate defenses against ever feeling it, that's different from what we're talking about here. But if you're feeling your grief, moving through your days while carrying it, and simply not healing as fast as others expect, you're not avoiding, you're honoring depth. You might also be thinking, what if this damages my relationships? What if people get frustrated with me and leave? This is a legitimate concern, and here's the truth. Some people might pull away. The people who need you to be a certain way in order to be comfortable around you might not stick around while you honor your authentic timeline. And as painful as that is, those relationships were conditional on your emotional performance, not based on genuine connection. The depth anchor method will show you who has the capacity to be with you in your full reality, and who only has capacity for the edited version. But here's what else happens. The people who matter, the people with depth themselves, will respect your boundaries. They might not fully understand, especially if they haven't experienced significant loss, but they'll respect that you're being honest about your experience. And you'll likely find that your honesty creates permission for others to be honest about their own struggles. Your refusal to perform healing becomes an invitation for others to stop performing too. Let me tell you why this method works when everything else hasn't. It works because it's aligned with how grief actually functions rather than fighting against it. Grief is not a problem to solve. It's not a condition to cure. It's the natural human response to losing something significant. When you try to rush it, you're essentially telling your nervous system, your heart, your entire being that its response to love and loss is wrong. This creates internal conflict that actually slows down natural integration. The depth anchor method works because it reduces that internal conflict. Instead of fighting yourself, judging yourself, trying to force yourself into someone else's timeline, you're working with your authentic process. This alignment creates space for genuine transformation rather than performative healing. Your energy goes toward actually integrating your loss instead of toward managing everyone's opinions about your loss. It also works because it's protective. Grief already requires enormous energy. Adding the energy drain of constantly defending your timeline or absorbing other people's judgment makes everything harder. This method gives you specific practices to protect your energy, to create boundaries, to separate others' discomfort from your reality. That protection allows your natural healing processes to unfold without constant interruption. Finally, this method works because it acknowledges that you are the only expert on your grief. Not your therapist, not your support group, not the grief books, not your well-meaning friends. You. You know the depth of what you lost because you lived that relationship. You know the complexity of your grief because you're experiencing it from the inside. The depth anchor method returns authority over your grief to the only person qualified to have it, you. So you've learned the depth anchor method, and you understand why your timeline is exactly right. Now let's turn this understanding into a practice that protects your grief and transforms how you move through it. I'm going to give you a clear action plan, starting right now while you're still listening to this excerpt. Right now, before you do anything else, I want you to place one hand on your heart. Feel it beating. That rhythm? That's your timeline. Not the timeline of the person who asked if you're feeling better yet. Not the grief book you read or the support group schedule. Yours. Say out loud or in your mind, "My grief moves at exactly the speed it needs to move." That's your first act as a sovereign mourner. You've just claimed your authority over your own healing process. In the next few hours, today, you're going to use the depth anchor method for the first time. When someone asks how you're doing, or when you catch yourself thinking you should be further along, pause. Take 3 seconds. Feel where you are in the deep water, middle water, or surface. Don't judge it, just notice it. Then respond from that place. If you're in the deep, you might say, "I'm in a tender place right now." If you're in the middle, "I'm managing, but it's still hard."
If you're at the surface, "I'm having a lighter day." You're not performing, you're reporting. You're honoring the truth of this moment. Also today, write down 3 things you've been told you should be doing or feeling about your grief. Maybe it's, "You should be over it by now," or "You need to stay strong," or "You shouldn't cry so much." Next to each one, write what your grief actually needs. Maybe it's more time or permission to fall apart, or space to cry whenever you need to. This is your declaration of independence from other people's timelines. Tomorrow, you're going to start building the sovereignty habit. Set a reminder on your phone for midday. When it goes off, check in with yourself using the water depth metaphor. Where are you right now? Deep, middle, or surface? Just notice. You don't need to change it or fix it. You're building the muscle of awareness without judgment. You're learning to be present with your grief exactly as it is, not as someone else thinks it should be. Then tonight, before bed, acknowledge one way you honored your timeline today. Maybe you let yourself cry when you needed to. Maybe you said no to something that would have been too much. Maybe you simply stopped apologizing for where you are. Write it down or just speak it into the dark. You're reinforcing your identity as someone who protects their grief.
Over the next week, days 2 through 7, you're going to practice the full depth anchor method in real situations. Each time you feel pressure about your timeline, whether from others or from yourself, use the 3 steps. Locate where you are in the water, accept that this depth is necessary, trust that you'll surface when you're ready. Keep that list from day 1 nearby. When those shoulds come up, read what your grief actually needs. You're rewiring years of messages that told you grief should be neat and quick and convenient for everyone else. Also this week, find one person who can witness your timeline without trying to speed it up. Tell them about the depth anchor method. Explain that you're honoring your grief's natural pace, and you need them to trust your timeline even when you're in the deep water. This person becomes part of your sovereignty circle. Every sovereign mourner needs at least one witness who won't rush them. By day 30, here's what's different. You no longer panic when a wave of grief hits you months or years after your loss. You understand it's just deep water, and you know how to be with it. You've stopped apologizing for your timeline. You've stopped performing recovery for other people's comfort. When someone suggests you should be further along, their words don't shake you anymore, because you're anchored in the truth that your grief knows exactly what it's doing. You've become someone who not only honors their own timeline, but helps others honor theirs too. You're a sovereign mourner, a guardian of authentic grief. Remember, you can come back to this episode anytime you feel that pressure returning, anytime you need to be reminded that your timeline is sacred. Your grief is not a problem to be solved on someone else's schedule. It's a depth to be honored on yours. Now, go claim your sovereignty.